There sure was a ruckus east of Doubtful that evening. The medicine show was going full bore, with one act after another, but now there was the orphan wagons parked nearby and some cottonwoods. It looked like the whole town of Doubtful was on hand, and so were a mess of cowboys off the ranches. All them orphans, they were cut loose to go wherever they wanted. The girls, they clumped together and seemed timid. But the boys, they roared around looking for ways to get into trouble. Mr. and Mrs. McCoy, they just roamed placidly, keeping an eye on the orphans. The stage, backed by one wagon, was all lit up, drawing attention to the show. I wandered around behind the stage, looking for trouble. But most of them medicine show people, they just sat on folding chairs and smoked cigars, including the women. The professor appeared, all fixed up in his tux and tails and stovepipe hat, and now he climbed a few steps and got out in front of that mob. This would be his last pitch. Whatever he didn't sell tonight, he'd have to sell in the next town.
Ah, my friends. My new lifelong friends in this noble town of Doubtful, Wyoming. We come to the moment of parting. Tomorrow, Dr. Zimmer's medicinal exhibit will pack up. Not only all of our things, but all of our sweet memories and hasten away. Now, I've told you all about what my famous elixir does for the mortal body, but I have yet to speak of what it does for animals. The tonic is known to put new life in old horses and mules, to put joy into a venerable dog, and it has a special effect on draft horses, making them eager to pull and tug and turning them young again. A spoonful for your horse and the plowing goes better. Now, to prove my point, I invite someone to bring his horse up to the stage, and I will supply an absolutely free dose of my tonic. And you will soon see that old horse sigh, smile, and dance. Are there any takers?
Sure enough, several cowboys were running to fetch their horses, and in a moment, one showed up. Zimmer expertly opened the horse's jaw and pumped a spoonful of his tonic into the beast, which licked and slurped.
Now, friends, it takes a little time for you to see the results. So, while we wait, I'll be pleased to sell you 2 bottles for 1 as my going-away offer. $2 for 2 bottles of Dr. Zimmer's medicine tonic.
Sure enough, a mess of cowboys lined up in front of the teamster who was doling out the bottles and collecting the cash. He must have sold 20 bottles or so when the horse began weaving, rocking, swaying, and finally settled to earth, sighed, rolled over on its back, and pawed the air.
There, you see, one happy horse. Listen. Listen to him pass gas, the mark of true happiness in any livestock. Show me a farting horse, and I'll show you a happy horse.
But he stared anxiously at the downed animal, until at last the beast got up on its forelegs, and then staggered up on its rear legs, and shook the dirt off.
One happy horse!
The cowboys flocked around the beast, patting it, tweaking it, studying it, and mostly agreeing. The tonic had wrought joy in the old plug.
There you see, the salvation of man and beast.
Well, I had to credit Zimmer. Those cowboys ponied up in a long line and began to shell out their hard-won cash for the tonic, instead of blowing it all in the saloons. But then, a cowboy reached into his britches to buy some of that joy juice and came up empty.
I've been robbed! Some light-fingered whelps made off of my purse!
That sure caused a commotion, and pretty quick, most of them cowboys were digging into their pants, making sure they still had their cash and private parts, and a mess more came up missing their pay.
Some little whelp's gone and dug into my pants.
I didn't doubt what started the crime wave and headed straight for them little orphan buggers who were racing around there. I'd had my eye on one, a carrot-topped little punk that looked as mean as a lobo wolf and pretty fast. I snatched him by the collar and flattened him on the dirt and dug into his pockets. And sure enough, there were 3 purses he'd purloined while working that crowd, and by then Rusty had snagged another punk, this one with blonde hair and a big jaw, and he proved to be another light-fingered genius, with 4 more cowboy purses stuffed into his pants. Them cowboys saw all this, and snared the rest of the orphan boys, and dug into their pockets, while the McCoys sounded like a pair of squawking pigeons. But the cowboys came up empty. Rusty and me, we'd got the two pickpocket punks. It took a while to get the purses back to the right owners and have them count up the cash, but in time we got it all squared away, and they got back into line and bought Zimmer's miracle elixir for their horses and their own carcasses. The orphans, male and female, vamoosed over to their own camp and hid out. I sure wondered how the adoptions would go the next morning on the courthouse steps. Rusty and me, we dragged those two little hooligans off to the jail and set them down for some serious palavering. You first. What's your name?
My name's whatever you choose. I don't got none, but Mickey'll do. And if you want me to fess up, you got it. I've been snatching purses since I was 6, and I almost got enough to retire tonight.
You with that orphan train?
Them turds. I almost got away tonight.
And you?
Call me the Big Fin Copper. I got more loot than Mickey, and I'll whip his ass any time.
Where'd you grow up?
Nowhere. Hell's Kitchen, but you're too dumb to figure that out.
Where's that?
That's where this orphan outfit caught me. Regular Snannick came down right over me, and they hauled me off to here.
You want to spend the rest of your days behind them bars there?
Beats getting adopted and having to work my ass off for a living. That's what it is, pal. Slave labor. It's a slave labor outfit selling us out.
You been doing this all your life?
Since I was old enough to spit, Copper.
Now you want to go to the pen, the big brick pile, and hammer rocks the rest of your life?
Hey, they feed me, right?
Yeah, toss us in there. We get 3 squares a day, and I don't have to lift a finger.
You got any remorse?
What's that? If it's worth something, I'll cop some for you.
I stole a bottle of Zimmer's dope. It's in the wagon. I'm gonna go on a wild ride.
Where'd you get that?
Right off the table where that big galoot was making change.
Now what do you want to be when you're grown?
A paid clock stopper. Them gents get $100 for each hit. I'd kill me a half a dozen and live like a king. I'd slit their throats. Beats having a gun.
By this time, I sure was wondering what to do. And the most likely thing to do was to get these two out of town as fast as the orphan train would take them. I couldn't think of anything that would slow this pair down. That's when King Bragg walked in. King and his sister, Queen, ran the Admiral Ranch outside of Doubtful. They were both tough customers, as hard as any people got, but straight shooters. Their pa had started the outfit and employed the roughest hands in Puma County, including Big Nose George, Spittin' Sam, Smiley Thistlewaite, and Alvin Reen. They sure weren't men to mess with, and most of them were recruited from jails back east. The Braggs ran their outfit with an iron hand, and smart people left them alone.
I heard about the ruckus. These the little punks?
Yep. This here's Mickey from off the street somewhere, and this one's the Big Fin from Hell's Kitchen, wherever that is.
Perfect. They're just what I'm looking for.
No, they're not. This one here, he wants to stay in jail because he gets meals and no work. This other, he wants to be a contract killer and live easy.
My kind of fellers. I'll indenture you tomorrow when they have that hoedown on the courthouse steps.
You know what you're doing, King?
Sheriff, I run the best reform school in Wyoming. A few days with Spittin' Sam and Big Nose, and they'll be the best little workers around.
I'm locking them up tonight, King.
I'll buy them tomorrow.
Not a bad deal, I thought. Except maybe the brats would steal the ranch. Next morning, I went to see the medicine show off at dawn. I sort of hated it. I hadn't figured out who nipped the boodle in Zimmer's cash box, and I hadn't come up with any suspects at all. I wished I could sit it right with him. I wrestled myself out of my cot at Bell's boarding house and got out there just as the outfit was fixing to roll.
You found some hard-won and easily nipped greenbacks that belong to me?
No, sir, I reckon I ain't. Not even a likely prospect. But I want an address, so if I get a hold of it, I can return it.
I have none, sir. I hope to retire in Ames, Iowa, when I've advanced a few more years. But my home, sir, is only a soft and seductive dream.
The feller sounded sort of lonely. It would be a strange sort to run around the country peddling tonics all his life, with nary a hope of home and family. But the world's full of odd sorts like him. You do well here?
I would have, but for the theft, Sheriff.
You sure it ain't someone in your company? Someone who wouldn't be noticed sawing away on the padlock in your wagon?
It pains me to see you drive a wedge between my loyal people and me, sir. No, they are stalwarts. The visit to Doubtful was a wash, thanks to some culprit in your town. And now, sir, we make haste for Douglas up north-a-way.
Those people were standing around, waiting for me to let them loose, it seemed, so I waved them off. For once, the professor wasn't in his tucks and tails. He wore soft breeches and shirt and was going to drive one wagon. The whole business seemed unfinished to me, but that's how it is with law enforcement. Stuff goes unresolved. For all I knew, this outfit pilfered all the stuff from George Waller's mercantile, and maybe more.
One last word, Sheriff. People in towns like yours are suspicious of road shows like mine. There's a sentiment that we're knaves and thieves, and that we're not to be trusted. I've run into it time after time. So if there's a doubt in your bosom, feel free to examine any of my wagons and their entire contents. Maybe that'll put to rest whatever's bothering you, whatever brought you here at dawn to look us over.
Well, Rusty, he had a look already, so you just get on the road now. I got a mess of new troubles, including an orphan sale this morning.
I'll sell you a bottle of tonic for 50 cents, Sheriff.
Nah, Mama always said don't use crutches if you can walk upright. Zimmer nodded and clambered up to the high seat.
Yeah!
I watched him go, itchy and unhappy, wanting to finish business that lay hanging over him. It put me in a bad mood, and when I thought of those little hooligans I had to go back to the jail and feed, I got myself into an even badder mood. Them two, unless King Bragg could square them up, was headed for a hanging, and likely their own. The brats were awake and rattling the cage. When they saw me, one reached for the slop bucket, and I knew what he had in mind. Toss that at me, boy, and I'll put a bullet between your eyes. That was a slight exaggeration, but it stopped him. Some people, Boris is the only language they understand. He edged away from the bucket, which stank from the night's accumulation. You want some chow, do you?
Nah, we don't need nothing. When do we get out of here?
When I feel like it. You have to get on the good side of me to get what you want.
There ain't a good side to you.
You got that right, boy. Rusty, he came in with two bowls of oatmeal from Barney's Beanery, eyed the prisoners, smiled, and looked over the logbook.
Hey, we want to feed.
You gotta work for it.
Doing what?
Talk. Tell me all about yourselves and you'll get your chow.
Talk?
You bet. Start yakking away. Talking's hard work. Who are you? Where'd you grow up? Who are your folks? Who are your grandparents? What do you want from life? You got any dreams? You talk, work hard at it, you eat. You slack off, you don't eat. Mickey and Big Finn stared at each other.
I got nothing to say.
Tell me everything that's happened to you. That met with silence. Rusty, he was enjoying this. Neither boy talked. The clock ticked. The boys eyed the cold gruel malevolently. I finally relented, handed them their gruel and spoons, and they wolfed it down. You want to talk now?
We ain't worth it.
You're worth it. I want to know all about you.
Yes, you can throw the book at us.
Think whatever you want. Mostly I want to know who you are. I like me, but you don't like you, is that it? I wasn't making any headway with the boneheads. But pretty quick, I was rescued by King Bragg. He had indenture papers in hand, had made the legal arrangements with the McCoys and the Children's Aid Society, and had come to collect. There in there. You got some help? You'll need it.
Big Nose George and Spittin' Sam are right outside.
Yours, then. I unlocked the cell while the brats watched, ready to bolt, but King Bragg and I, we collared the pair and marched them to the door. Out there, Big Nose and Spittin' Sam were waiting with two empty saddle horses.
Who's this? What's he want?
This is King Bragg. He's got a big ranch near here. He's indentured you both.
Indentured? What's that?
I get to stuff food into you until age 16, and you get to work for me and learn to trade until age 16.
Work? Ain't gonna let you sucker me into that.
Well, that's fine. I won't let you sucker me into feeding you.
We'll bust loose, sucker.
I'm sure you'll try. Wanna try right now?
The hooligans, they eyed me, and eyed Bragg, and eyed the door, and allowed themselves to be taken outside where the horses were waiting, along with Bragg's men.
You're gonna have to drag us.
Mickey immediately quit walking, and so did Big Finn. So we dragged them down to the street.
This here's Big Nose George, he's my ramrod. This here's Spittin' Sam, he's my second ramrod. You boys climb up on those nags and we'll head out.
Instead, Mickey and Big Finn sat down in the street.
Make us.
Them hooligans never knew what landed on them. Next they knew, they were stretched out in the horse dung on their bellies, and the ramrods were sitting atop them. Spitting Sam, he dug into his pockets for some chaw, put a pinch into his mouth, and handed the tin to Big Nose, who took some and slid it under his tongue.
You had breakfast yet, Sam? A rank horse sure makes me hungry.
Well, send someone to the beanery, George. I got a bucking bronc here.
Hey, let us up!
You hear something, Sam?
Just the crickets.
By then, they were attracting spectators, who eyed the odd scene with displeasure. This whole deal lasted about 10 minutes.
Yeah, let me up. I'll get on that plug.
Glad you see it our way, boy.
Big Finn rose slowly and climbed on the horse, looking whipped. Mickey followed. In moments, King Bragg and his foreman were riding out of Doubtful with their two indentured boys riding slow plugs, just in case they got notions. Neither of them had ever been on a nag before, so the ride out to the ranch was going to be an education that would improve their butts. I didn't think it was going to go well for anyone, but I'm not very good at predicting the future. The thing that clawed at me was a hope that the little hooligans were treated fair and not hurt. They didn't know any better, and I hope King Bragg understood that. It was time for the adoptions, and there were a mess of people, mostly curiosity seekers, milling around the courthouse steps. I was glad most of them didn't see what was going on in front of my office. I saw the McCoys over there, with their orphan wagons, and all them young folks looking for a new ma and pa, and maybe not wanting one. But they didn't have any say in it, being minors, so most of them were just standing there, half afraid, awaiting their fate. The girls were quieter and sadder. The boys were scared. Anyone could see that. The girls didn't look at the people, but stared at the clay, while the boys, some looked bitter, and others were real hopeful, and wondering if they were entering heaven or hell or no place at all. The McCoys, they got their show on the road right at 10.
All right, friends. These are orphaned youngsters, or children without shelter, and they're looking for good homes and parents who protect them, love them, raise them up straight and true, and welcome them into their families. You've had a chance to look them over. They're all sound of limb and teeth and speak English. They'll all be good little workers and affectionate and obedient young people. So let's begin. Are there takers?
This here time when a lot of desperate and lonely little tykes was about to be adopted sort of got me riled up. That's because some of those people circling around the children wasn't interested in giving the children a home. They was looking for slave labor that had cost nothing but food and clothing. It was real quiet there on the courthouse steps. Adults, they were staring at the children, and the children, they were fidgeting and looking like they wanted to be somewhere else. The first to take the plunge was Reuben Cork, who had a mule-raising outfit on the west edge of Pima County. He was a skinny old bachelor, 50 maybe, graying, with cruel eyes, and a good eye for horseflesh. He had two ex-jailbirds working for him, mostly so he could stay out of sight from the rest of the world. I knew him only because he drove his wagon to town to load up now and then, and he brought in mules to sell or ship out. He was eyeing a skinny kid named Thomas, who looked about as bitter as Reuben, and wasn't enjoying being poked and prodded.
You like animals, boy?
Thomas shrugged.
You ever seen a mule before?
Thomas didn't answer. There was no need.
I take him. Indenture him. He's what, 9? I get him for 7 years, do I?
7 years of hell, I thought. If the kid didn't run away first. Kit Carson, he was indentured, and he ran away and stayed in the mountains, and they never did catch him. The kid, he didn't move and looked defeated. He was not the master of his fate. He was a minor. If it wasn't Reuben Cork, it might have been a fine fate for a city kid, getting out into the healthy fresh air a lot. But Reuben, he was as likely to use a buggy whip on the boy as he was on a mule. There wasn't any law against it. And all I could do was watch the transaction as Cork laid out a few dollars, put his ex on some papers because he couldn't read or write, and motioned the boy to climb onto a saddle mule, and that was that. People were watching, and not with gladness as far as I could see. Next, a girl named Sally got plucked up by Alphonse Smythe, the postmaster, and his wife, Mabel. They poked and prodded and checked teeth, and then added up the $10 and signed some papers.
Well, Sally, welcome to our house. We've always wanted a daughter, and now we have you, my dear. I think you'll find your life with us a happy one, if you're not lazy or contrary.
Sally clutched the few rags she owned and quietly followed the Smythes up the street. They lived a few blocks away. People watched them, mostly wondering privately how it'd work out and whether anyone would be happy with the adoption. Well, at least Sally got adopted. That was a good sign. A couple of boys got indentured to Puma County ranchers. That looked fair enough to me. Most ranchers were bachelors, and they had a bunkhouse full of drovers and were always short of help. It wasn't home, and those boys wouldn't see much of any mother around, but they'd be sheltered and fed and probably come out fine at age 16. An hour or so dragged by, and no more children got took. The rest of them, they were doomed to go on, shuffling from place to place until someone adopted them. The McCoys were looking about ready to pack up and leave. McCoy was talking to Turk, our liveryman, about buying one wagon and team since they didn't need three outfits anymore. That's when I noticed the kid standing in misery, tears leaking down his face. He was freckled, with cauliflower ears, auburn-haired, and miserable.
Hey, kid, what's wrong?
I just want a mom.
Well, maybe next town you'll find just the right mom.
Three towns already. No one wants me.
What's your name, sonny?
Riley.
How'd you get that name?
Mama.
Somebody's gonna want a Riley. That's a good name for a boy. I wish I was a Riley.
You gonna arrest me?
For what?
For crying. They always say stop that.
Feller can cry all he wants in my book. My ma always used to say, a boy without a good ma is a boy who'll never grow up.
I'm slow. That's why.
Boy, join the club. My ma, she always called me slow.
How'd you get to be sheriff?
I'm fast with my hands.
Like shooting?
Yeah, that's what got me my job. But I don't shoot people if I can help it. I just try to keep people safe here.
Wish you could find a ma for me.
I spotted Rusty. And just then, an idea popped into my head. Hey, Riley, would you settle for a paw?
I never had one.
Well, paws are as fine as maws are and can teach you a trade when you get old enough.
They can?
You bet. Now, I'm going to go talk to that fella over there for a minute, but I'll be back. Hear me? I got a hold of Rusty, who was looking over the orphans in the crowd. Hey, seeing as how you didn't get any Ukrainian brides, how about a kid?
Rusty, he was as shocked as if I had fired him on the spot. Almost as shocked as if I'd just given him a $2 raise.
Who wants a kid?
Well, you were fixing to start a family, weren't you? Siamese twins? You were even going to rebuild the outhouse for them so they could sit together. Now, seems to me, Rusty, if you're willing to rebuild your outhouse, you could adopt a boy. That there boy, Riley, he's just aching to belong to someone, and that someone's going to be you.
What did I do to earn this?
I'm just trying to console you, Rusty, because you lost your two Ukrainian twins.
Oh, I'm not fit for fathering.
Then try mothering.
How am I going to raise a kid? I got to be on duty.
A whole sheriff outfit will pitch in. We'll get the kid raised. We'll make Riley a deputy as soon as he can handle a gun.
Well, don't this beat all. I've been snookered.
That was Rusty's way of saying yes. So we headed back to Riley, who was still leaking tears.
Boy, here's a paw, if you want him.
Riley, he stared upward, looked deep into Rusty's face, and then ran to Rusty and threw his arms around my deputy and hung on as hard as he could. It was all Rusty could do to hide what was crawling over his face. 20 minutes later, the Puma County Sheriff's Office had a new little deputy, with a star on his chest and two or three daddies. No sooner had the orphan train pulled out, with a lot of tears flowing, than a mess of cowboys landed in my office. They were all waving bottles of Dr. Zimmer's Miracle Healing Tonic, and they weren't happy.
This stuff, it don't work. I get more mule kick out of a one-bit shot of red-eye. I tried a little dose and a big dose, and it ain't worth the glass it came in.
Yeah, that's right. This stuff, it's creek water and maybe a little flavory. And to think I paid good money for it. I got suckered.
I tried a swallow or two, and I sure didn't get any trip to heaven out of it. Looks to me like I got stuck with nothing.
That was the verdict of eight cowboys and Rusty. Me, I had that sip when the show rolled in, and it flattened me and started the world spinning round and round and round. They carried me home. It sure kicked me in the butt.
But I was up there on that little stage before he really got to peddling this stuff. Looks like there's more than one version of the tonic.
Looks to me like we got took. Anyone who bought the stuff late in the game, we all got suckered.
I sampled one of the bottles, and sure enough, it was creek water, pure as the mountain snow, with maybe a dash of wintergreen flavoring. It sure didn't start any tincture of opium buzzing in my innards. You want to do something about it?
You bet we do.
We can catch up and squeeze some cash out of it. I want 100, and I'll refund it to anyone that's got a complaint.
You gonna bring him in and charge him?
Hell no. The sooner he's out of here, the better off we are. Puma County's gonna see the last of him. But we'll collect enough to make good on everything.
So what do we do with our new deputy here?
Sure enough, there was Riley about 1 hour into being Rusty's boy, staring real sad at us. Saddle up, Rusty, and bring a spare rifle as well as your sidearms. I'll meet you at Turk's in a bit. Well, come along, Riley. We're going to meet my landlady, Belle. I was soon hammering on her apartment door. She had about half of the first floor of her boarding house and rented out the rest. She opened, eyed Riley, and shut the door.
Sheriff, I'm not in the orphan racket.
I ain't selling orphans, Belle. You get to be a mama for a few hours if you lay down a straight flush.
This is Rusty's kid. I've heard it about 6 times now.
This is Riley. Hey, kid, meet your ma. At least, she'll be working at it. She's never been a ma in her life, and she's itching to try.
Hey, kid, you got cauliflower ears and slope shoulders. That's how I like 'em, kid. Handsome man shows up at my door, I kick ass. Give me a kid with a mug like yours any day. Come on in, kid, and face the music.
Riley edged into the warm apartment.
Hey, Riley, see that white jug with the orange butterflies on it? Go over there and lift the cover and take 2. That's the cookie jar.
Fearfully, Riley did as he was told, extracted 2 sugary cookies, and waited.
Eat, damn it! Hey, kid, come here.
She took Riley into her ample arms and held him quietly until the storm had passed. We got to go, Belle. I'll pick him up in a few hours. I headed for Turk's livery barn, where I kept the most recent version of Critter in a box stall. Rusty was waiting, saddled up and ready to go. Turk stood and watched. You always show up when I'm getting Critter saddled up to get on board.
I'm one of them types likes to watch a good hanging, especially after the drop, when the neck's busted and life's leaking out.
That was Turk for you. Critter, we're going for a nice little trip. You get bored in here, don't you? Well, we're going to see some country, and you'll see some nice spring grass coming up. Critter cut loose with a rear hoof. I see you're feeling just fine, Critter. It was already well along, so we trotted north on the trail to Douglas, hoping to catch up with the medicine show at its first camp, 9 or 10 miles out of Doubtful. It sure was a fine spring day, with all the dandelions blooming and all. Critter got into the spirit of things, and I had to hold him down to a jog. Critter is notional. He wanted to get into a race with Rusty's old plug, but I resisted. He got so fractious, I finally reined him into a tight circle until he got the message, and then we made good time. The soil was soft, and there were ruts where the medicine wagons had passed through. We raised the medicine camp late in the day. The outfit was parked at a spring with a few cottonwoods around it, a place that had been much used as a stop. They watched us ride in, and I saw a couple of teamsters slip toward their wagon, where a couple of scatter guns lay. They were cooking dinner in a tin stove.
They know how to live, Rusty. Mama always used to say, you want to eat soon, don't cook over an open fire. That takes forever to cook up something.
Your ma had the smarts in the family.
I didn't take to that kindly, but I was too busy keeping an eye on that bunch to make any objections. Zimmer, he had good vision, and he saw who was coming and raised one of his white hands. We rode in, saw the meal cooking, and saw the bunch eyeing us warily. This wasn't going to be easy.
Why, Sheriff, I imagine you have good news for us. You've recovered the stolen funds.
Well, no, Professor, that ain't it. Truth to tell, we got lots of complaints. This stuff you're peddling, it don't do nothing.
Why, every bottle is bonded and certified, sir.
Rusty, give me that bottle. Professor, you uncork this and sip for a little.
In fact, you drank her down entire.
Oh, I couldn't do that, sir. I've taken the temperance oath. Lips that touch whiskey will never touch mine. Now, as it happens, the tonic is 10% spirit, so I mustn't touch the bottle you generously offer to me.
Drink her up.
That would offend my person, sir. We must never violate another's person.
Drink her up. Zimmer stared upward at me. Critter was getting restless. He prefers to kill anything in his way rather than stand still. Now, we got about 50 people. They say there's nothing but creek water and wintergreen flavoring in these here bottles. So I said I'd fetch a refund. You willing to pay up, or do I have to haul you back to Doubtful?
Now, don't be hasty. There might have been a few bottles that were accidentally filled without the usual certified quality check, Sheriff. What I'll do is send you back with 10 bottles of Simon Pure double-checked certified tonic, guaranteed to produce instant joy and sublime peace in the partaker.
Nope. Zimmer, it's cash on the barrelhead, or I take you back and charge the whole outfit and let the judge decide what to do with you. I was keeping an eye on them two teamsters who doubled as musicians in the show. They were hovering around one wagon, ready to reach for their persuaders. You fellers, you come over here. They dallied a moment and then did, and I felt like Rusty and me, we were in a little more control. Rusty, he hung back, his hands not far from his artillery. I'm taking $100 back to cover any claims against you. Someone brings me a bottle of worthless creek water, he gets $2. If there's cash left over, it'll be kept for you when you come back.
This is certainly arbitrary and hasty.
That's what my ma always said. Call me Hasty Pickens.
I will give you 50. We sold most of those at a discount, $1 for two bottles.
All right, you give me 50. I got down off Critter, who eyed the bunch with laid-back ears and clacked his teeth. Critter was worth about 2 deputies in a deal like this. Zimmer looked forlorn, like surrendering greenbacks was the same as an attack of gout or getting a cold enema. We entered the dark confines of the bunk wagon and he headed for the strong box, which had a fresh padlock on it. You got you a new padlock.
Oh, it's one I remembered I had.
He unlocked the padlock and lifted the hinged top. There were greenbacks galore in there, and something else. The sawed-off padlock. What you keeping that for?
It might be repaired.
He swiftly counted out $50 in gummy greenbacks, and I stuffed them into my britches.
I want a receipt.
Well, that stumped me. I could manage it, but it would take some doing to print it out and put my X on it. Hey, Rusty, come on in. Rusty, he didn't like it, leaving that outfit to do whatever it wanted, but I thought it'd be all right. I had the cash to repay the gypped cowboys. Rusty, he looks around in there and sees things I didn't.
Cotton? That's the stuff that vanished from George Wallace's mercantile.
But by then it was too late. Just outside, there were them teamsters, each with a scattergun aiming our way. Zimmer had somehow slid away, so it was bird hunters against two partridges. Well, my ma, she always said there's no better way to win an argument than to poke a 12-gauge shotgun at some offender's mouth. It stops all conversation. And that went double this time, with one of them scatterguns aimed at me and one at Rusty. The main thing to do is keep your trap shut. So me, I just went real silent and wondered if this was the last sight I'd see.
This poses a sad dilemma with no good way out.
We're going the way of the carrier pigeons.
No, not quite. If we were to feed you to the magpies and crows, my friends, the Zimmer medicine show would come to an immediate halt, and every person here would flee for his life. There would be no doubt about who to pursue, and every lawman in several states would do so with great zest. So you see, I would face not only the departure of these friends and my show, but also my way of life, which I cherish. On the other hand, if we let you go, we face tribulations and another set of sorrows that would doom the show, and maybe remove our liberty from us. We all cherish our liberty, Sheriff. We wouldn't belong to a traveling road show if we were content not to roam and live within the bleak confines of some dreary city. Well, friend Sheriff, what are we going to do? I am awash in sadness.
Pass around some of your joy juice.
The real McCoy.
Ah, Sheriff, your humor excels, but your practicality is wanting.
You got any ideas?
Perhaps a trade-off?
What for what?
Well, suppose we return the goods that someone accidentally left in our wagon, and suppose we pay $50 to the customers who bought our elixir after the tincture of opium ran out, and suppose we pay a $20 fine for disorderly conduct. And then you go on your way, and we go on our way.
I got to uphold the law. Feller does something wrong, I got to haul him in so he'll face the music.
Ah, but we are remedying the wrong, you see.
I'm tired of staring down the barrel of a 12-gauge. I'm getting on my nag and heading back to Doubtful. And if you're gonna shoot me, then do it.
Hold up, deputy. Drop your gun belt and you can go. Adam, take the rifle from the sheath.
I wondered if Rusty had something in mind, but he was playing his cards close to his vest, so I didn't even get a look at his face. He got on to the livery stable nag and eased out of camp.
And you, Sheriff?
Me? I'm sworn to uphold the law, so I'm stuck here until I uphold it. Professor, this here Mexican roulette ain't gonna change. Either you kill me or I take you in. Your choice.
Adam, saddle a horse. I'll take my medicine.
Well, that sure was something. I collected Critter, and Zimmer cleaned out his cache of money and climbed onto a horse that a teamster saddled for him. They gave me Rusty's artillery to take to him, and two burlap sacks full of purloined items from the mercantile. But the shotgun on me never wavered.
I'll be back whenever fate decrees it.
We rode under a starry sky, making swift time back to Doubtful, and pulled in around 9 or 10. Rusty wasn't far ahead of me and was rounding up a posse when we got in. George Waller was pleased to get his stuff back, or most of it. What came back didn't quite match what got took. There were some ladies' items that had gone missing, but I wasn't inclined to ride out there and check what was on the southern parts of the grass skirt woman cooking dinner out there. I pitched the medicine man into a cell, which he eyed dolefully, and sat down with a pencil to draw up some charges, while Rusty went to find Hanging Judge Earwig and get him to open up court. There wasn't any attorney around to prosecute, but maybe it wouldn't matter if Zimmer pleaded guilty and coughed up a fine. Old Earwig, with his gray mutton chops and bald head, he even looked like a judge most of the time when he was sober, meandered into his courtroom. He grumbled and whined and didn't like being dragooned from his evening toddy, but I got real serious about it and said if he didn't show up fast, the county might have the expense of trying about 7 members of the troop and feeding them until it all was settled. So he finally hiked over to the courthouse in his bedroom slippers, lit up some lamps, and waited for me to bring in the current prize locked up in one of the 2 iron cells. Zimmer looked even more doleful than Earwig. He was wearing his travel clothing, not his show outfit, and looked like a little dumpling rather than some fancy impresario. The courtroom filled up real quick. Doubtful can't hold a secret 5 minutes, and word sure got around. And pretty quick, half the cowboys in the bars filled the room, and most of them had tonic bottles they wanted to exchange for some greenbacks. By midnight, we got the show on the road.
Will the culprit rise?
I prodded Zimmer, and he stood up.
You fixin' to make restitution and pay a little fine?
If your honor so declares.
You're gonna declare yourself guilty as hell?
Guilty as hell, your lordship.
All right, now we can divide the spoils. Now, what are you guilty of?
Watering the tonic, your lordship.
How many bottles?
I got one.
In all, there were 23 cowboys in there wanting their money back.
It's 46 emollients.
But your lordship, they bought these for less than list price.
Doesn't matter. It's $2 a bottle they'll be getting. Now, what else are you confessing to?
I confess to nothing, sir. But I am willing to make whole any injured party, within reason, of course, even if I am entirely innocent of all wrongdoing.
What are the rest of us in, Sheriff?
George Waller's store lost some merchandise, most of which was recovered when I raided the medicine show this evening. But he's still missing some, ladies' unmentionables, mostly because of the difficulty of making a proper search for the items.
What say you, Zimmer?
Well, your lordship, I am bereft of knowledge of all that, but believe she may have been making repairs to her grass skirts. When we are short of grass on the road, my animals feed on her grass skirts, and modesty requires that she have something else on. So my surmise, sir, is that she was simply attempting to protect her womanly modesty.
She ain't all that modest on the stage, Your Honor. Fact is, these here unmentionables got took from the mercantile and still abide somewhere north of Doubtful on the south side of the woman in question.
Waller, what are they worth?
$1.98, sir.
All right. I'll find this fellow two for the undies, and he can pay you when we're done, or spend 30 days contemplating the error of his ways, guest of Sheriff Pickens. That suit you, Cotton?
Your Honor, I've always disliked the name Cotton, but Pickens is all right. That was my ma's joke, calling me Cotton Pickens. But it's been an anvil around my neck all my days.
You're out of order, Sheriff. This court refuses to listen to tales of woe. We're after justice and money, and not necessarily in that order.
I must have really ticked him off. He hardly ever assails me, but once he banged his gavel on my head when I got cranked up in the witness chair.
Sheriff, has the culprit agreed to be fined?
Yes, sir, and I propose $25 for the whole lot. I could run up a list of offenses, but as long as Zimmer here is agreeable, it'd save Puma County a mess of work and bookkeeping if he just paid up.
Are you good for 25 more?
Your Lordship, that would be hard indeed on my loyal staff, who would not be paid if I am forced to squander such a sum as this. They have toiled, and the toilers deserve their reward. But if you would lower the bar, so to speak, to $7.50, I could see my way clear to satisfy all the demands of justice in Puma County, Wyoming.
Sold! This culprit is nailed for 7 4 bits, and will trade 26 bottles for $2 each, and will pay George Waller $2 for some vanishing undies. Does that cover it? And I'm not talking about the undies.
Your Lordship, this has been a pleasant and momentous occasion, and upon the conclusion of these transactions, I wish to treat you to a libation at the Last Chance Saloon, and will stand a drink for the rest of the gents here, in this progressive and noble city blossoming in Wyoming.
Well, Zimmer, if you've got a bottle of the real McCoy on you, I'll buy it as a parting gesture.
I just happen to have one, Your Lordship.
Well, quick as greased lightning, the cowboys turned in bottles and got $2, and Waller got his two, and the county got its fine. And we headed to the east end of town where the Last Chance Saloon stood, and Sammy Upward was soon pouring the stuff of life and pocketing all the loose change that was floating around. Zimmer and Hanging Judge Earwig, they got themselves a fine corner table and set about toasting each other and swearing eternal friendship and talking about future business partnerships. Me and Rusty, we went back to Belle's to pick up Riley, who was asleep on the couch, with Belle waiting and watching in her stuffed chair, an odd smile on her weary face. Next morning, I ran into the Puma County supervisor, Reggie Thimble, and he started jacking my hand like it was a pump handle.
Well, you finally caught some crook. I was beginning to think the county didn't have a lick of crime in it.
Well, Reggie, it wasn't me. Zimmer simply caught himself.
That's not what I heard, Sheriff. I heard you single-handedly captured the whole evil lot and brought the ringleader back here to face Hanging Judge Earwig.
I hope Rusty ain't spreading that manure.
What's this about him adopting one of those orphans?
Riley, yes. He nabbed one, mostly because I pushed him into it.
Well, fire him. You can't have a deputy running around with some orphan he latched onto.
Well, we got it all fixed. Belle, she's gonna catawamp us over Riley, and Rusty's gonna have a tough time prying the boy loose now and then and give him a little fathering.
Belle must have lost her marbles.
Reggie didn't much care for it, but he didn't have any real comeback, so he just growled a little about duty and loyalty and don't charge the county for anything not right, and stalked off. But all that morning, people came roaring up to me, shaking my worn-out paw, telling me how glad they were that I'd brought that arch-fiend Zimmer to justice. But that's life for you. They made a hero out of me when all I did was try to stay alive. At least I wasn't likely to be fired. Most days around Doubtful, some leading citizen or official was planning to evict me from my sheriff's office and hire someone more to his liking. But I managed to hang on one way or another. My ma, she always said just live a day at a time and keep plenty of corn cobs in the outhouse. I prefer cobs to Monkey Ward. A couple of days later,
a tent preacher came in with his own show and set up shop right where Zimmer's medicine show was playing. He put up a big worn canvas tent and a sort of pulpit he could thump with his fish belly white fist. This feller, Mr. Elwood Grosbeak, was a sinner collector and a first-rate pulpit thumper. He was looking for sinners under every bush and inviting them over there to hear all about their evil ways. And he had other things to talk about, too. He said the world would come to an end in 3 weeks before sundown, May 28th, and whoa to anyone who wasn't real prepared. Well, that sure scared the crap out of a lot of people, but there wasn't any crime emanating from his shabby tent, so I just stayed away. But a teamster down from Douglas told me that Grosbeak had been pulpit thumping up there, only he told those folks the world would end on May 1, and that had scared the dickens out of some. Come May 1, and Grosbeak was nowhere to be found there. And the sun came up and the sun set, and all that happened was that Grosbeak had cleaned Douglas out of about 400 smackerinos before rolling into Doubtful. I sort of wondered if it was proper to scare the hell out of people and run off with their cash. Grosbeak was holding his camp meetings each night and hammering his pulpit and saying May 28 would be the last day on Earth, and they were filling the collection plate he passed around in the middle of all this. I don't take kindly to it when I see the people I try to protect being fleeced, and I didn't have much of any notion how to slow it all down. I stopped in at the Last Chance Saloon, where my friend Sammy Upward tended bar, and asked him what he planned on Doomsday, and he said he was handing out free drink tokens that could be redeemed the evening of May 28 after the sunset. I told him about the deal up in Douglas, and he enjoyed that, and said maybe he'd invite Grosbeak to the Last Chance to deliver his tub thumper right there in the bar room and entertain the cowboys at the finish line. Well, the whole idea just blossomed, and pretty soon all the saloons in Doubtful were passing out tokens for a free drink on May 28 after the sunset. Barney's Beanery got into the act and offered a free breakfast to survivors who were still around the next morning. And then the madams got into it and offered one free lay between midnight, May 28, and dawn the next morning. That sure got the cowboys interested.
We'll offer one free hanging at dawn, May 29, and we'll announce a ballot to select who gets to enjoy the news. Now, if the world ends on the 28th, like the man says, no one gets hanged.
I got an idea, Rusty. We'll invite Grosbeak to stand there with a noose. If he's right, he'll vanish into the heavens. If he's wrong, he gets hanged. When Rusty really liked an idea, he didn't say so. He just whistled. And now he was chirping like a canary. That sure was a good scheme, all right. And I was wondering how I could pull it off. There were a few in Doubtful that deserved a good hanging, but getting them up on the gallows would take some doing. Getting Grosbeak up there might be a lot easier. If he believed in what he was talking about, he'd gladly step right into that noose. I decided it was time for a little talk with Elwood Grosbeak. He was staying at the Wyoming Hotel. It wasn't much of a hotel, but it was the best in town. They had a little dining room there in the hotel, so I tried that first. Sure enough, he was sipping Java in there. He was a formidable man, with hair slicked back with goose grease and a fresh white shirt and one of them huge cravats, red paisley, and a pretty nice suit coat and breeches with a knife-edged crease in them. He didn't wear that stuff in his revival tent, but just a plain gray outfit. The first thing you noticed about him was his eyes, big and burning, and lips that seemed to mock even when he wasn't saying a word. He saw my star and rose at once.
Sheriff Pickens, I believe.
You got her.
What brings you to my table, sir?
Well, there's fellas around here who don't think the world's coming to an end, and they're getting up some entertainments to celebrate when nothing happens and it's time for a drink.
There's always skeptics. I deal with them regularly. They don't grasp my message, which is not that the earth beneath our feet will vanish, but that the elect will be whisked away to their eternal reward. 1 hour you see us, the next hour we're gone. The lady down the street has vanished. The man you call a friend is departed. The child you watch grow up has gone away. That's the story, sir, and that's what I preach.
Yeah, well, are you going up the golden stairs?
If I'm called, and I'm sure I will be, I'll be gone.
Do not look for me on this earth on May the 29th, because I will have joined the angels and the seraphim and cherubim.
What are those? You got me there.
It's too long to explain, sir, but call them helpers. They are assistants in heaven.
Well, Rusty, he's my deputy. He has a dandy idea. The sheriff's office wants to join this here party. And what we propose is to put up our gallows and have you volunteer for a hanging on May 29. Comes dawn and you're still around, well, you get hanged. But if you got taken up, there's only an empty noose dangling in the sunlight of a new day.
You mock me. You mock my beliefs. You laugh at the powers above.
Well, my ma used to say, put your money where your mouth is. She also used to say, actions speak louder than words. You want to prove your beliefs? You can come to the necktie party. Your very own party.
I am speechless, Pickens. Absolutely speechless. You should be recalled or fired.
Well, seems like a good idea, this gallows party. Think what it gets you. A mess of believers everywhere.
You forget, sir. I am a man of the cloth, a prophet. And you must not insult anyone who's been set apart to bring people the good word.
Well, they tell me up in Douglas you collected about $400 before you vamoosed in the night on May 1. And now you're here, and the greenbacks are landing in your collection plate, and I was just sort of wondering if we'd see your outfit on May 29. If you all are on your way to heaven, I guess you'd leave behind your tent and wagon, right?
Are you done insulting me, sir?
Well, I ain't very good at it, but I'm getting better the longer I'm in office. Maybe before they fire me, as they're fixing to do, I'll get real good at insulting. Where are you going next?
What business is it of yours, Sheriff?
That was as much a confession as I needed. I got a saloon keeper friend, Sammy Upward. He says he's having a big end-of-the-world fiesta the afternoon of May 29, and you're invited. He's giving out tokens for free drinks and says you'll get one. You gonna come on in? But Grosbeak, he was methodically eating and ignoring me. You got many of the town's ladies going out there in the afternoons? They laying out a lot of quarters and dollars to get themselves in good shape to be hauled up to heaven? He ignored me. If I was you, Reverend, I'd think about giving all that cash back or donating it to the Doubtful Chamber of Commerce. They could always use a little infusion.
You are a crass materialist, Sheriff. You haven't the faintest notion of spiritual matters.
Well, my ma used to say, being spiritual is what you do if there's money left over after paying your bills. I'm thinking, Mr. Grosbeak, maybe you should pull up stakes and get on the road just as fast as you can before someone gets his neck broke. Well, that done her. By the time I got out to the campsite, them doomers, that's a good word for it, the doomers were packed up and fixing to go. They didn't even bother to come over and complain. They just loaded up that ragged canvas, heaped stuff in another white wagon, and drove off. I noticed that Elwood Grosbeak, he had a fine ebony carriage. But the rest, a ragamuffin bunch, mostly walked beside the mule-drawn whitewashed wagons. You heading for greener pastures?
You won't escape your reward.
And then they rolled away on the rutted road to Laramie. And I thought them nice folks in Laramie were in for it. I watched them go with a lot of cash they'd extracted from the good citizens of Doubtful. Then I spotted something I didn't want to see. A whole mess of Doubtful women, every last one of them dressed in white, head to toe, even white hats and veils, was coming along on Wyoming Street, and they each had a little basket. And I knew what was in them baskets. It would be money, greenbacks mostly, but also silver and gold and jewelry. And I knew what all this was about. And I knew what would have happened if Grosbeak had hung around instead of skedaddling. So I just waited there on that field, with all the spring grass trampled down by crowds and the sun playing tag with puffball clouds. I just waited there for them ladies in white, all dressed to the nines, a mess of fevered up ladies fixing to pave their way through the pearly gates. They flooded onto the flat, saw that it was empty, and there was only Sheriff Pickens standing there. They hadn't expected it. Finally, one of them approached me. It was Reggie Thimble's third wife, Matilda, and she was the leader of this bunch.
Mr. Grosbeak has departed?
Yes, ma'am.
And was he taken up to heaven?
No, ma'am. He got out of Doubtful just as fast as he could pack up and vamoose. She contemplated that for a moment. She was flanked now by a few more of the ladies, making a kind of white wall in front of me. I knew them. They were merchants' wives, mostly, and a few maiden girls waiting for handsome and promising husbands. They sure looked nice, all gussied up in white, with flowery white hats.
Did you cause the Reverend to depart, Mr. Pickens?
No, ma'am, but I did make a suggestion or two. I said, Mr. Grosbeak, you should put your money where your mouth is. I'll set up the gallows, and you step right up and put that noose over your neck, and if you ain't taken up by the morning of the 29th, says I, we'll drop the trap. He sure got offended, and said I was disrespectful.
You have desecrated the sacred.
Well, ma'am, this outfit comes from Douglas, and I got word of how it went up there. Grosbeak, he says Doomsday is May 1, and he preaches it and gets them folks upset, and they heap cash into his collection plates, and then the last hours of April, he and his bunch, they harness up and pull out with a mess of greenbacks in their britches. And they come here, but now the date's May 28th.
The devil has you by the throat, Sheriff.
This doesn't matter, sisters. The hour of salvation is at hand, even if this evil man has driven away our prophet. His words are true, and we must have faith. So instead of cleansing ourselves of all our worldly possessions by placing our baskets on his table, we will proceed to the creek, and we will divest ourselves of everything, and then await the chariot of fire that will carry us upwards into glory.
Ma'am, don't do that.
You are loathsome, Mr. Pickens. We will toss our filthy lucre away and prepare for the end and the beginning.
Ma'am, you've been bamboozled. You've been conned.
You are unspeakable.
Come with me.
You, sir, are an unbeliever.
Hang that man back.
She led that whole lot of nice ladies in snowy outfits toward the creek. I had an awful sinking feeling in my gut. But what they did with their own money was up to them, and there wasn't anything I could do about it. The ladies looked determined and soulful, like Joan of Arc about to be burned, as the English heaped kindling at her feet. These sainted women began their stately walk toward Doubtful's dubious creek, which supplied water to the town and removed other stuff. There, in a sort of grassy glade, the women collected along the bank and plunged into mournful silence. About then, Kronk, the faro dealer at Mrs. Gladstone's sampling room, he waited on the path with questions written all over him. He was out early, enjoying his morning dog turd-colored cigar and the fresh air.
What are they up to?
They are surrendering all their worldly possessions to prepare themselves to be swept up to the pearly gates in a day or two.
What's in them baskets, Sheriff?
Hey, you leave that stuff alone, hear me? I'll fetch their husbands in a bit and try to get it all back.
Any law keeping me from trying?
My law. That stuff, it's going back just as quick as I can get it back. Kronk, he just smiled and puffed away, enjoying the May weather. Them women in white, they all raised their arms and waved at the sky, and then one by one they approached the creek and tumbled the contents of their baskets into the purling water. I sure saw a mess of green fluttering down. Them greenbacks, they didn't sink like the coin, but simply floated leisurely down the creek, which ran behind Saloon Row and the Red Light District and toward the Platte River, miles distant. Kronk knew if he dove for that loot, I'd buffalo him so fast he wouldn't know what bounced off his skull. One by one, the shining white-clad women tilted their baskets over the creek and loosed a small fortune. I thought I saw a few gold rings and maybe a gemstone or two in there, but I was standing a respectful distance. And Kronk, he was smiling to beat the band like he had a sudden vision of retirement from the shadowy confines of the saloon where he ran his faro game month after month. There sure was a mess of greenbacks bobbing downstream. I should have guessed what came next. When the bills got near Denver Sally's place, a mess of women in wrappers and kimonos came boiling out. It was early for them gals to be up. Their business day didn't start for some while, but somehow they got wind of this and were heading toward the creek to harvest the crop floating in.
Take it in, but you keep me out?
You steer clear of these women here. Kronk went running toward the bells of the evening, planning to improve the day's take from his faro game. Me? I stood on the riverbank and watched them beautiful women in the whitest white unload their worldly goods. And when it was over, I headed for the courthouse. I wanted to talk to the supervisor, Reggie Thimble, about what his latest wife was up to, and suggest that maybe a few husbands around Doubtful might want to reclaim what was left of the family stash. Them women, they were in no hurry, and headed back to the empty field for some reason, probably to await their ascent into the cloudless skies. Well, that suited me fine. I'd get the husbands out to the creek and let them collect what they could, and hope they wouldn't get into a brawl doing it. I started into town, but I was too late. There were ladies of the evening, and barkeeps, and even a few old drunks down there on the creek, scooping up the loot, much of which shone brightly in the pebbled bottom of the creek. Oh, there'd be some unhappy households this evening, and there'd be a few people from the sporting district who would be partying. I spotted Rusty on the way and told him about it, and Rusty just shook his head.
I think you got your tail in a crack.
So I clambered the courthouse stairs and found Reggie Thimble sharing a little toddy with Silas Jones, who owned the Blue Rib Branch, way west of Doubtful.
Sheriff?
Need a private word, sir?
There's nothing he's saying that old Silas shouldn't hear.
It's about Mrs. Thimble, sir.
Well, fire away then.
I settled down and narrated the whole shebang while Thimble glared at me.
So you've driven the tent preacher out, is that it?
Well, he packed up and left, yes, after I let him know I was keeping an eye on him.
You telling people in Doubtful what their religion's gotta be, is that it?
No, just warning a crook to behave. That was Thimble's wife leading the pack of white-gowned ladies, and now the family's fortunes were at least somewhat depleted. I wondered what he was thinking. I reckon we can recover some of the cash from all those sports in the district. Rusty and me will have to turn them upside down and shake the bills and coins out of their pockets, and they'll whine some.
Finders keepers. If you hadn't chased a tent preacher out of town, there'd be no trouble.
If the world doesn't come to an end on May 28th.
If it didn't, he'd simply return the items the next day with his apologies. But now it's lost. Small fortune changed hands because of your boneheaded behavior. Looks like we'll have to fire you, Pickens. This time you're going too far.
Spittin' Sam, one of the Admiral Ranch foremen, raced up to my office on his lathered horse and came bursting in.
Trouble, Sheriff. Them two hooligans, they got King and Queen captive and are holding out for $10,000.
Captive? $10,000?
The orphans, little bastards, they worked this out. There's guns all over the ranch and they collected a bunch. Caught King Bragg and his sister at dawn and are holding them in the big house. Say they want $10,000 and a getaway buggy, and if they don't get the dough, they'll kill King and Queen.
Well, there ain't $10,000 in Puma County.
You gonna come out there or what?
Well, I should bring the money. Get Hubert Sanders to give it to me.
It's your baby, Pickens. We can't even get near the big house. For city brats, they sure know how to shoot.
And the Braggs, you sure they're in there alive?
No, we're not sure of anything.
Those boys, Mickey and Big Finn, they set any deadlines?
It's a mess, and if you're gonna help us, come on out. If not, to hell with you. We'll play it our way.
Were they gonna let me talk to them?
Who knows? City boys don't hear a damn thing.
I'll get Critter and we'll go talk. I buckled on my gun belt and checked the loads and collected a scatter gun. If I had to use any of those, I'd lose, and the Braggs would be history. Spittin' Sam nodded, and I knew he'd meet me at Turk's where I'd get Critter saddled if I was lucky and get my leg broke by a flying hoof if I wasn't. I wasn't going to take any ransom money, not now. I wasn't even sure Sanders would open his vault to pay the ransom without collateral. There was a mess of things to think about, and I'd have a little time riding out there to look at some possibilities. But I knew the first thing was not to underestimate those two orphan hooligans who knew more angles than a hungry carpenter. Spittin' Sam and Turk stood silently in the barn, waiting for me to back Critter into the aisle and get him ready for travel. I got a piece of 2x4 and went up to that bronc. I'm in a hurry. I'll whack you between the ears, Critter, if you don't behave. I'm a horse whisperer, Turk.
More like a horse shouter.
But Critter was listening. He tried one ritual kick when I opened the stall door and then backed out like he was wanting to be sociable. In quick time, I got him bridled and saddled.
That's a record. It's a bad omen.
But we trotted out smartly, And when Critter was warmed, we slid into a rocking chair lope that would get us there in half an hour. Critter, he was enjoying it more than Sam's Roman nose nag. There's been some shots fired?
Oh, yeah. They was trying out the hardware and keeping us well away from the house. We tried circling around and breaking in the rear door, but they were wise to it.
They got food and water and plenty of rounds?
Who knows? But them punks is smart and they got it all schemed out.
Well, what's the deal?
Bring money, load a buggy in front of the house, one with the top on it, and they'll take a hostage and kill them if they're followed.
Can we put some slow plugs in harness?
No, they want two saddle horses, too, tied behind the buggy.
Will they know where they're going?
Hell no. They're off the waterfront. They don't know which way is north.
They talk about their destination?
They don't know Wyoming from Florida. They just want to beat it with 10 grand in their satchel.
You think they'd kill the Braggs?
At their age, it's easier than if they were older. Yes, and queen first, just to show off a little.
Is one of those boys a little softer than the other? Listen to reason.
Mickey, he's sometimes friendly. Big Finn, that one was born in hell and is going back soon.